Medicaid expansion. It's been one of the most talked about issues in Kansas for years now. But with so many arguments for and against it, it can be difficult to get a grasp on how this topic is affecting the state and the people who live here. So we're going to explain those arguments for you, get a fuller picture of Medicaid expansion. But after we check in on some other stories making news at the State House, I'm Jim McLean, and this is State House Blend, Kansas. As is our custom here on The Blend, we start by checking in with Stephen Caranda, State House Bureau Chief for Kansas Public Radio, a Kansas News Service partner, and we're checking with him about what's making news at the State House. Stephen, you have recently covered some really interesting hearings on some really interesting bills. Let's start with one that, as I understand it, would require law enforcement agencies to quickly release videos of officer shootings. Tell me about that bill.
What it would do is provide more requirements for police to release videos. In Kansas, now they have a lot of discretion on when to release things, when not to release things. And what this would say is a lot of types of videos would have to be made available to people who are in them. But specifically, if there's a police shooting, that video needs to be made public within 30 days. So supporters of this say, you know, making it easier to get videos increases the public trust in law enforcement and increases accountability. But Sedgwick County Sheriff Jeff Easter told me that, you know, he believes they kind of need to balance transparency with what's actually practical for departments.
Do I believe that we should hold officers and deputies accountable? Absolutely. Do I believe that the best way to do that is releasing video on everything that we do? I'm not sure about that.
So, you know, Easter's concerns are some videos, like police shootings, that need to be released in 24 hours. That's just so much work, it would conflict with their actually investigating crimes.
Well, let's dig into this just a little bit. As I understand it, at the hearing, the sister-in-law of someone who was shot recently by Topeka police was pressing the case. Tell me about what she had to say to the committee.
That's right. It was Heather Joyce, who is the sister-in-law of Dominique White, who was shot by Topeka police last year. And she basically laid it out that they couldn't see the video for 11 weeks, so they really didn't know what happened in the event. And her argument was, let's make these available so that families don't go through what her family went through, where they were waiting for weeks to just find out what happened.
What lawmakers have to do in this instance is try to balance the needs of law enforcement with the desires of families and others who want to see more transparency when it comes to these officer shootings. Because, of course, this has been a huge issue across the country in terms of police relations and the trust factor between communities and law enforcement.
Yeah, it's really like a lot of things. It's a balancing act. They want transparency, but you can't make it so difficult on officers that they have trouble actually investigating crimes.
From sitting in on the hearing, did you get the sense that members of the committee were sympathetic to the case being made by law enforcement or the other way around?
I think there was sympathy on both sides. Obviously, a lot of lawmakers on the Judiciary Committee are familiar with law enforcement, and they want to make sure they're not making things too difficult on law enforcement. But we also had a bipartisan group supporting the bill. A conservative Republican and a Democrat both said, we need this. We need to open this up.
Okay, I've left the best until last, Stephen. Let's talk about what has to be the top story of the week, and that is the dog for governor story.
That's right. This guy in Hutchinson saw that multiple teenagers who aren't yet old enough to vote had signed up to run for governor, and that Kansas effectively has no requirements about running for governor. So he said, hey, why not my dog? So he did sign up his dog, Angus, to have a campaign committee for a run for governor.
So one can only presume that he was trying to make a point about the fact that there really are no standards in terms of running for governor in the state of Kansas. And we've had quite a bit of attention paid to Kansas nationally about all these teenagers who are running for governor, a Libertarian, a Democrat, and some Republicans. I'm assuming here that the committee isn't going to take any action specifically in state law, say, that you can't have a dog running for governor. But it might speak to the question about setting an age
Yeah, this kind of points at a bigger issue, which is, do we need requirements in Kansas law for running for a position like governor? In the case of the dog, a staff member in the Secretary of State's office, Brian Caskey, said they looked through state laws and there are multiple references to the governor being a person. So they said if someone were to actually go and try to formally file to run for governor, they would not accept it for a dog. So it does have to be a person.
So you think that there might be some action in the legislature this year in response to all these teens running for governor to set an age limit or to do something like that?
Yeah, you know, you look at this governor dog story and it's easy to just, you know, laugh it off. But there are legitimate changes to law that lawmakers are looking at possibly taking, and we'll have to see if they get around to it this year.
Well, Stephen, we're going to count on you to keep us up to date on that story and the other ones we discussed, which I think are really important issues. And I appreciate you being here with us this week and look forward to talking to you next week.
After all this dog talk, maybe you could say I'll be sniffing out the good stories.
I could say that, but I resisted, Stephen. You didn't.
Yeah, I know. I was barking up the wrong tree with that pun.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
State House hearings are not often well attended, but when it comes to packing a room, there are few groups more reliable than those pushing for Medicaid expansion. That was certainly true last week. Expansion supporters literally flooded the Senate Public Health and Welfare Committee room, and they gave testimony. 140 people gave testimony in support of expansion, and one of them was this woman.
My name is Amy Houston, and I own a restaurant in Mulvane. It's called Amy's Pizza Place.
In 2009, Houston was diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma, a form of cancer.
So at that time, I had to work 10-hour days in a row to have 4 days off to do my chemotherapy treatments. Then I had to start my radiation. Radiation is every day, so I wasn't able to perform the duties of my job when I started my radiation. So unfortunately, I lost my job and therefore lost my medical insurance.
Uninsured and out of money, Houston, a single mother of four, said she decided to skip further treatment until she could afford it. So she and her children were left obsessing about her symptoms and how they might be signaling the progression of her disease.
It's a constant reminder to them that they may not have me for very much longer.
Well, there's an estimated 150,000 Kansans who are in similar circumstances. They've fallen into something we call the Medicaid gap. That means they're too poor to afford health insurance, but they make too much money to be eligible for Medicaid. Many advocates say that expanding Medicaid would give coverage to people like Amy and those in the gap. And they've come close in recent years. Lawmakers actually passed a Medicaid expansion bill last year, but Governor Sam Brownback promptly vetoed it. And the new governor, Jeff Collier, he shares Brownback's opposition to expansion. Even so, supporters still have hope that this year, somehow, could be different.
If you look at where we are legislatively, I don't know that it's that different. But in the past year, a lot has happened.
That's Sheldon Weisgrau, a spokesperson for the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas. It's a Medicaid expansion advocacy group funded by several Kansas health foundations.
First and foremost, it's very clear that Congress is not going to be able to easily repeal the ACA. I think last year at this time, all of us were pretty certain that some changes, maybe big changes, were coming. And that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So that's one thing. We also have another year of data and experience from other states. And so in the last year, we have seen continued evidence of how this helps state budgets. We've seen evidence of it improving surgical outcomes. We've seen evidence of Medicaid expansion improving infant mortality rates. We've seen evidence of hospitals further benefiting from getting uncompensated care paid for. And we have had a study in this past year that shows that rural hospitals in states that have not expanded Medicaid are 6 times more likely to close. And so we have a lot of new information that we had an idea about last year that is becoming more solid as we move forward.
Well, last year you came very close.
We did.
Passed Medicaid expansion bill, the governor vetoed it, failed to override the veto in the legislature by just a couple of votes. So does all that additional evidence translate into at least a couple of extra votes?
I would hope so. I think Jim, this is more of a political issue than an evidence issue at this point. If data ruled the day, we would have had Medicaid expansion years ago. I'm hoping that for some legislators that maybe were not hard-nosed but were maybe closer to being on the fence, maybe this is the sort of information that will make a difference for them. If a legislator is from a rural community that has a hospital that may be in trouble, I'm hoping that this is the kind of evidence that may make a difference for them.
You said that you have mounting evidence that where Medicaid expansion has been put on the books, that it's actually helped states' budget situations. Senate Majority Leader Jim Denning told me early on in the session that there's no way the state can afford Medicaid expansion. Just don't bring it up. We have, you know, school finance to deal with. We don't need to deal with that. We can't afford it. So why the disconnect there?
Well, because I think legislators like Senator Denning and others who believe we can't afford this are not looking at the whole budget. They're looking at only the cost side of the budget. Yes, this is going to cost some additional dollars in the Medicaid line item on the budget. But Senator Denning and others are not looking at savings we might accrue by doing this. There are currently people who are covered in the current Medicaid program where the state pays 45% of all the costs, who would be covered under expansion, and the state would never pay more than 10% of that cost. There are also revenues that the state generates out of the Medicaid program from the privilege fee on managed care organizations and from drug rebates from pharmaceutical companies, that when you add all those up, what you get is, for the foreseeable future, something that is budget positive for the state.
Let's just take a listen to what Senator Denning had to say.
Mm-hmm. Every state that has expanded Medicaid has felt the pressure on their budgets. It's not free money, and it's not neutral money. It will cost Kansas $50 to $60 million, and it's foolish to think that one would want to expand Medicaid and have no ability to pay for it.
Other than sitting down, and I have sat down with legislators and walking them through the budget step by step, I'm not sure how to address that. There have been peer-reviewed, published articles in prestigious journals like the New England Journal of Medicine that demonstrate the positive economic impact on states.
I want to ask you about Amy. This is a person, I want to talk a little bit about the human toll. For better or for worse, you can be against something or for something, but people are caught in the middle when it comes to health care. There are people who don't have the income necessary to qualify for the subsidies in the federal marketplace, Obamacare marketplace. They also don't meet the income requirements for CanCare, the state's privatized Medicaid program. You have a fairly large number of Kansans who were caught in that gap. What do they do?
Well, I think that's exactly the point, Jim. What they do is they try to get by piecing together what people who don't have health insurance do when they get illnesses. They go to the emergency room. They rely on charity from doctors and hospitals. They run up enormous medical debts. They skip appointments. They don't fill prescriptions. There's at least 150,000 people in Kansas who are in that position, and I haven't heard a single response from any of the opponents to Medicaid expansion about what they would propose to do for those people. And you're talking about Amy. She's a star witness at the hearing. She's a perfect example of, there's this mythology that people who don't have insurance, it's because they're not working hard, they should go out and get a better job. Here's someone who's trying to do all the right things. She owns her own business. She chooses to live in a community in Kansas. She's active in the community. She's on the school board. She's a volunteer firefighter. She really wants to be able to stay here. And legislators who will not vote for this are making it very difficult for people like her who has an active cancer diagnosis and periodically is able to wrangle some way to get her bills paid, but often cannot.
As you just heard, expansion supporters believe that they have a strong evidence-based case for expansion. But opponents also have reasons, many of them political, for thinking it's just a bad idea. For instance, Governor Jeff Collier says it wouldn't make sense for Kansas to move forward on expansion, given the lingering uncertainty about the future of Obamacare and, by extension, expansion.
Look, Washington is going to be changing the rules, and the president's budget even showed the elimination of that. We need Kansas solutions, not Obamacare.
Many conservative Republicans are opposed to expansion because, in their view, it's an expensive new entitlement for able-bodied adults who may not deserve taxpayer-funded health coverage. Greg Pfister is with the Florida-based Foundation for Government Accountability. He's made that argument against Kansas's expansion bill for the last couple of years now.
This is not assistance for someone's elderly grandmother who's struggling to live. Expansion is an optional, inclusionary category of eligibility to a new group of people. Adults between 19 and 64, earning incomes up to 138% of the federal poverty line.
That's about $17,000 a year for a single person, $34,000 for a family of four.
These adults don't have disabilities, most of them are without children, and don't work a full-time year-round job.
Finally, expansion opponents say supporters are overselling its benefits, particularly its potential to save struggling rural hospitals. Here's Kansas Secretary of State and Republican candidate for Governor Chris Kobach at a recent candidate forum.
The one thing we don't want to do, and there are a lot of Democrats who are saying falsely that this will help rural health care, and that is we don't want to expand Medicaid in Kansas. It will not help rural health care.
That is just not correct.
Tom Bell is president of the Kansas Hospital Association. He's heard all the arguments against expansion in the 5 years that he's been pushing for it. And he can show that rural hospitals would benefit from the additional federal dollars that expansion would bring. And he can point to numerous polls showing that a sizable majority of Kansans, both Democrats and Republicans, support expansion. And yet he still has nothing to show for his 5 years of trying. Talking to him in the State House right after the hearing on the expansion bill, we asked him why.
A couple of things. Number one, you can keep doing it because of all the great people that are supportive of it, like Amy, who testified today. But secondly, why is that the case? I think it's a sign of the way our politics has become so divisive that there are less and less people in the political system who are their first priority is to let's solve a problem. Let's be pragmatic about this issue and resolve it. And we're just not seeing that as much as we used to. We've clearly got some people in the legislature who want to take care of this issue, who want to do some good things for people, and frankly, who want to get it off the political table. And they want to figure out a solution, but it doesn't appear right now that the leadership in the House and the Senate and the second floor is there yet. We're going to keep working on it, though.
You've been in a lot of meetings over the last several years on this issue, including meetings with former Governor Brownback, meetings in which then-Lieutenant Governor, now Governor Jeff Collier, was involved. And do you think there is any room to negotiate with Governor Collier? I have heard over the years that he perhaps was more opposed to expansion than was Governor Brownback.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's the case or not. I think being a healthcare provider and seeing the circumstances that people get into helps us think that maybe there is some room to work with him. Unfortunately, we haven't seen that yet.
So as you sit here today, the bill gets out of committee, probably. But there's some doubt even that it gets a vote on the Senate floor. I've heard Senate Majority Leader Jim Denning really does not want to see it brought up.
Yeah. Well, we hear the same things. And I think this is like a lot of legislative issues that you get involved in. You got to take one step at a time. Let's get it out of the committee. Let's get it on the floor. And let's look for an opportunity to show how supportive the people of Kansas are of this issue.
So while the debate continues, people like Amy Houston are left trapped in the Medicaid gap. And she wants lawmakers to understand that many hardworking people, just like her, are being hurt as they wait.
These are the hardworking, middle-class, lower-middle-class Americans that choose to be in Kansas and or have to be in Kansas. For me, I choose it. I have family all across this country. I can move to Arizona and get medical insurance. I love Kansas. I choose to raise my children here. I don't want to move somewhere else in order to have affordable health insurance. And at this time, I've decided to step forward and speak to the committee because I want them to know that they are now my solution. I'm out of solutions that I can come up with on my own. I don't want to be behind a screen and saying things on social media or on websites or just sitting from my home and doing nothing. I want them to see a face of a person that lives in this state by choice, that has this struggle legitimately and has chose to do the best I can to do things right, and they're my solution.
Starting next week, we want to hear from you. We want you to send us questions about what goes on at the State House, from what issues are in play to how things get done or not done under the big copper dome here in Topeka. So until next week, I'm Jim McLean. Thanks for listening, and please join us again next week for another edition of State House Blend, Kansas.